Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
It's Power Hour, LSU.
All righty, not really a let's go from your boy to start things off here, because I got to be honest, it's always uncomfortable to talk about somebody losing their job. We've all been laid off at some point in our lives, right? We've all been told, hey, we no longer need your services in this capacity. But the truth is, there needs to be an honest conversation about this LSU offensive line. So this was passed around quite a bit. It's the thumbnail image of today's video. Weston Davis, the 608th offensive tackle out of 653 possible offensive tackles graded in a stat called WAR, which is wins above replacement. So before we get into some Vanderbilt film breakdown, which is what we also will do today, what is WAR? Well, they talked about it briefly on the broadcast. WAR is a thing that's actually used way more in basketball, and where it started was in baseball. It's basically wins above replacement. How many wins does this average player have over the average player who would play the position? Okay, so we don't have the specific WAR number. It's normally like a lower number, like 2.3 or whatever. So in baseball, a guy like Shohei Ohtani is going to have a ridiculous WAR. In basketball, a guy like LeBron James is going to have a ridiculously high WAR. So the specific WAR numbers aren't included into this. I am a little skeptical. I don't know anyone at TeamWorks. I don't really know a whole lot about TeamWorks. Why there are so few offensive tackles graded compared to guards and centers, it doesn't make a lot of sense that centers, that there would be 945 centers graded and only 653 offensive tackles graded. But the truth is, I do believe Weston Davis has been bad. I don't think, based on this WAR metric, though, that Josh Thompson has been a top 100 offensive guard in all of college football. And while I do think Weston Davis has struggled, I don't know if he's been, well, it's kind of hard to say. I don't really know how this is tabulated. But the truth is, the PFF grades back up what TeamWorks says. And it also backs up what I've seen on tape. And this offseason, I have been, in many ways, criticized for how much I put on the plate of DJ Chester and a lot of our offensive struggles. And, well, LSU basically told you what they think of DJ Chester. They've not played him really at all. He's their most valuable backup offensive lineman, and he's a good guy to have around with all the experience he had. But the truth is, a lot of what's wrong with this LSU offense is that every aspect of it isn't great. Almost every last little thing about this offense is not great at all. And the thing about it is, with modern analytics and predictive measures and what the experts out west use to actually make these lines, it's a lot based on what you are offensively. So, friend of the channel, Dave Bartu, he consults on many coaching searches. He shared earlier today that the widest delta between two different units in college football in terms of his power rankings in the Power Four is the LSU offense, which is 108th in his efficiency metrics, compared to the LSU defense, which is fourth nationally, everyone. And it's adjusted for opponent and everything. That is ridiculous. Do you know how hard it is to be elite defensively with an offense that struggles? I can even argue that it's harder than what we had to do in 2023, where, you know, in 2023, you had the elite offense and the really bad defense. I think it's harder to maintain an elite defense and at the same time have a bad offense. So what this LSU defense has done up to this point is really unprecedented. It's really absolutely positively insane. I've seen some people compare it to the Les Miles days when we were a defensive team. And while it is true, our defense did carry a lot of those teams, it's also true that this offense wasn't as good as most of those prehistoric offenses, because we don't do anything well. So I understand if you want to roll Weston Davis out there again versus Vanderbilt. But the more I watch, the more I'm like, man, I don't know how much longer this can go. And we had a great conversation about it on our Sunday live stream with Blake. And then we had a great conversation about it yesterday. Brian Kelly talked about Weston Davis, about how they like the fact that he's going through these struggles and they're still really high on him. I've shared that there were a lot of year two highly recruited offensive linemen that were not good as first-year full-time starters. Lance Hurd was one of them. And now he's one of the best offensive tackles in the country. It's also important to point out, and I do think this is important, offensive linemen are expensive. And I pause because I know when we get into the price aspect of things, we don't have the data. You know, when it comes to the NFL, we have those numbers. We know how much everyone costs. We know where everybody went in the draft. We don't know how much this player or that player is getting paid. What I do know, if you want to go get an elite offensive lineman out of the portal, you've got to pay up. Or if you want to get an elite one out of the high school ranks, which Brad Davis has done a good job of, you got to pay up. So I don't know what Weston Davis actually cost to get him here. He was initially slated to go to Texas A&M. So we'll see how this actually plays out over the next couple of weeks. Now, before we get to a few Vanderbilt clips I want to break down, we are going a little bit earlier tonight. We started at 5 for some of our viewers that are watching down the road. It is my wife's birthday. She's going out of town, actually, to Nashville. She's not going to the game, which kind of pisses me off. She should go to support our LSU Tigers. But she is going to see Keith Urban. And tonight is the only night we can go out for her birthday dinner. Yesterday was actually her birthday, but the birthday dinner is at 6. So that's why we started a little bit earlier. We will be back live tomorrow at 6 p.m. Central. Keely was the first in the chat. And like we always say, this actually happens quite a bit. we were slated to have Daily Joy on. And it's funny because this offseason, Daily Joy, she's one of our favorite guests. She's become a really good friend of the channel. She came on the show, and then she was on the show again, and she blew up. She's got the biggest rising SEC brand out there. And she was supposed to come on tonight, but we had to reschedule. Not for me, because I moved it up. She's getting all this fame and notoriety. I was happy to be a part of it in a small way. And she actually sent me an SEC pretty hat. You guys got to go check it out. It's really good stuff. And I say this because I love the fact that LSU has a huge, huge, huge female fan base that really knows ball, and I appreciate it. Now, this could be a case, and this happens with a few of our other male viewers. You're just logged in on your wife's or girlfriend's or sister.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Channel. So that could also be the case, but college football media and the college football YouTube analytics tell me it's such a male dominated space. I'm so glad. Sherry Berry is one of our biggest supporters. Paris is one of our biggest supporters. I'm so glad that PHO has quite a few female viewers. So there you go. So yeah, this is her. She was in the chat first, so we'll get to her question first. Have we already faced our most difficult defense, or is that still to come? Oklahoma's defense is probably the best defense we still have to play. Texas A&M's defense is really good, but we have to play Oklahoma's defense on the road, and it's going to be cold. It's just Oklahoma gets brutal around that time of year. So that's the toughest defense. I'm also really high on R. Mason Thomas, their defensive end, who actually knocked Garrett out of the game, beat Will Campbell. So it's tough. And the truth is, Keeley, hopefully I'm saying that correctly, there's no more bad defenses on the schedule except one, which is Arkansas's. Their defense is absolutely putrid. But every team that we play in the P4 the rest of the way, they're really good. They're really good defensively. And the thing that sucks about Arkansas is that the Hogs will be coming off a bye. So they'll have multiple weeks of preparation and will be coming off the Alabama game. So it sucks. It really, really, really sucks. And I'm still thinking about going to the Oklahoma game. By the way, another one of our female viewers lives in Norman. So, you know, I want to go. Alan Kinney is a big Oklahoma YouTuber. He's a big friend, a good friend of mine. I really want to go. I've always wanted to go to Norman because, you know, as someone in my mid-30s, my high school life was Sam Bradford and that Oklahoma offense every year. So, yeah, I would say Oklahoma is the toughest defense we have the rest of the way. Alexander sees the upside in Weston Davis. It can turn around. You know, the thing that is interesting, when you look at the PFF grades, now PFF, I'm telling you right now, there is not a service in all of football media that has been destroyed more in the last 24 to 48 hours than Pro Football Focus. Oh my goodness gracious. You got J.J. Watt on Pat McAfee. You have Chris Long. You have all these players basically saying that the PFF grades are a bunch of malarkey, that they are terrible. And for me, there are some things about PFF that I really do like. I do like the fact that they actually do the work. But there's also things you're going to disagree with. I also think from an NFL player standpoint, I can understand them being on eggshells about PFF because they're grading you. Okay, so I can understand J.J. Watt saying, hey, this is stupid. And there's some at PFF that think that they have narratives and they serve agents, and some of them do get a lot of money from the teams, more so at the NFL level than the college level. And then obviously the thing that I've always pointed out about PFF is you don't know how the players are being coached. You don't know. You really don't. You don't know how a play is being instructed, how it's being taught. So that is impossible for PFF to know unless they go to every coaching staff and say, hey, how was that drawn up? That's impossible to do. With that said, I do think the low of the lows, PFF actually gets correct. They do signal in the right direction. All right. So you look historically at some of the LSU offensive linemen. Let's take a look at a guy like Austin Deculus. So him and Weston Davis are very similar in what they were as prospects. Okay. Weston is a lighter guy. Austin Deculus was always a thicker, towering guy. But in essence, they were both top 100 recruits that were from the state of Texas and went to LSU. Two completely different players in their play styles and all of that. But Austin Deculus' grade went way up from 2018 to 2019 and then in his final season in 2020. Where in 2018, he was a barely playable player. But then 2019 and 2020, he took a huge step forward. And there's a few other LSU offensive linemen that has actually happened to. So there is that glimmer of hope that Weston Davis does take that massive leap next year. And that is part of the reason why you are playing him, because you're making a bet that this top 100 recruit is actually going to turn into something. And you also don't really have any other options. The downside is that he really is playing terribly. You can, though, work around that. So let's go back to the Lance Hurd example. Once again, I watched every Tennessee game. I do Tennessee film studies every week for the last 3 years. Lance Hurd had some downright atrocious games. Like, Weston Davis bad. Now, he wasn't, to me, in full disclosure, I always say this before, you know, I get into a piece of analysis. Lance Hurd's autograph is right here on my wall. Okay, we've interviewed him before. He signed some stuff for us. But I've not talked to him since then. But I always say that because, you know, you'll see a photo and be like, well, that's why Carter said that. But the truth is, he wasn't as bad as Weston Davis has been this year, if that makes sense. But at the same time, you look at Lance now, he is really good. He is really, really, really good. If he wanted to come out for this next year, he would get drafted. So what do? If you decide to take him out, do you try DJ Chester at right tackle? I wouldn't do that. I just would not do that. Be careful what you wish for. What about Carius Kern? Well, there's a lot to that. there's some concern about Carius Kern's grasp of the offense, which makes sense. If you are a guard and you're playing guard and now you're at tackle, it's different. Okay. So obviously I'm really high on Carius Kern. I think Carius Kern, I made this statement before the season began. I thought Josh Thompson was LSU's best offensive lineman. And I thought Braylon Moore was probably the guy who had the highest floor and the most important LSU offensive lineman. But I said before the season, I think Kyrus Kern right now is LSU's best offensive lineman. That's how high I was on him as a talent in his film. Saw him play last year in person. He's a freak. He's that good. But there's more to it than just sticking him out there. I do think he'll be available. I do think it's also important to point out that he's only played 3 games. So if you want to do the redshirt thing and you want to juggle that, go for it. Which is why I was so damn vocal about how stupid it was that we played him 1 snap versus Louisiana Tech. I will never get over that. Ever. Okay? Out of all the crazy things we've done this year, didn't make sense. Okay? So, you know, I'm fine with keeping West in there for this game. I really am. Okay? I really, really, really am. That's probably going to be my final opinion on it, but the thing is, last year, Josh Heupel, with 2 lowly graded offensive tackles, still found a way to make it work. Okay? So let's break down some of what Vanderbilt likes to do offensively, and we start off here. The most important thing is Pavia on rollouts, right? This is one thing I know for pretty certain that they're going to do. They're going to roll out and try and attack that little space of the defense, right? That's been a spot that you can get. That Clemson actually left a lot of yards on the field in that pocket of space. And obviously, when they get on the edge, you have to be able to gang tackle. That is very, very, very important. Something else about Pavia is the dude is just insanely, insanely competitive. Look, he actually comes in here and throws a shot, which is dumb. I never want my quarterback doing that. But that's pretty big. Now, I want to get to the next thing here is the QB run game. So you have a fake here, and it ends up being a QB counter to the left side. These offensive linemen are good but not great athletically. That's pretty normal for any Vanderbilt offense. You can get around them. So we move ahead here to the big play in this game, which is Cedric Alexander, one of the more underrated running backs in the SEC. And you'll see here that this play was actually made by the play side double team next to the tight end. So you look to the top, you see the tight end at the very top. Those 2 offensive linemen double teaming that defensive lineman. Look, he's got him knocked all the way back to Birmingham. And then 55 is able to get to the safety, and that opens this up. That's one of the better blocks of the season right there by number 50. So this Vanderbilt offensive line is good. They play together. This is an overall experienced unit, but I do think, and once again, a lot of bias involved in this, LSU's defense is better than Alabama's defense. But Alabama's defense is really good. Hubbard, 18, he's trying to chase him down as a turnover machine. Jordan Jefferson, yes, that really is his name, number 10, is also a very good player. Okay, now we get to the Vanderbilt defense. Obviously, this is the game that will mostly base a lot of the things that we do out of. So it's 2nd and 20, and obviously we don't have the quarterback playing at the same level as Ty Simpson, but Ty Simpson did throw a pick earlier in this game, and look at this throw. Boom. Okay. Can't really play quarterback better than that. You know, the thing that I wanted to get to as far as this Vanderbilt defense is concerned is their run defense. You can gash them. You can gash this unit. So you have a counter GY being run to the left. All right, so why is the counter GY being run to the left relevant? Well, we've been trying to run some counter GY, which is pulling the guard and the tight end. So you see 56 is pulling around here. 80 right there. Cuevas is pulling around. And it's Jam Miller with the football. Boom. Okay, 56 gets a good job kicking out that edge. And look at the movement up the gut, okay? This is nasty, all right? As crazy as the play side double you saw a minute ago from Vanderbilt was, this is arguably even better from Alabama to the left side on the D end. And you can't really block this play any better than Alabama blocks it here, all right? The problem is, when have you seen our offensive line create movement like this, All right. You could see, even if you're not good at recognizing film or anything like that, you see where that black line is? That's where the offensive line started to play. Now, look at where the offensive line is now. Most of them are on the Vanderbilt 49-yard line. So the Alabama offensive line here was able to move 340 pounds of defenders here, actually more than that, 440 pounds of defenders, probably more than that, all the way back 3 yards, okay? You can do that versus this Vanderbilt front, all right? Now, we just need Jam Miller to make the safety miss. Can he do it? He can, all right? So he's able to pick up a few extra yards. Obviously, Caden Durham is probably better in the open field than Jam Miller. Jam Miller is probably a better overall experience back, but you get the picture. Caden can house that if he's given the opportunity, all right? So there you go. Now, I normally don't do this for live streams. Type Y for yes, type in for no if you like that. I could do more of that for live chats. And let's go to Alexander. I like Cohen Echols last game. He did play well. Brian says their offensive line is very, very good. Yeah, they're good. I mean, like, you're not going to be going up against anyone that's going to get drafted, but they're good. They're together. And Pavia is also a quarterback who makes offensive line play easier. And something else that the Vanderbilt offensive line does a really good job of is they do play at a slow pace. Vanderbilt likes to make games ugly. Now, here's what's different about this year's Vanderbilt team. I don't know how many more ways I could describe how difficult it is to put up just raw points. It's hard to put up a lot of points versus other FBS schools. It just is. It's not a knock on LSU. It's not a knock really on anyone. But I know it seems very amateur of me to just keep harping on that 24 number that we have not put up 24 points versus a Power 4 team. I want to keep my analysis basic this week. I don't want to get into EPA, which we do. We'll do our advanced stat preview for tomorrow's live stream. It'll be up on Patreon probably tonight or tomorrow. Depends how crazy we get tonight for Hayes' birthday. I'm kidding. We're not going to get crazy. We're in our mid-30s. Ish, late 30s ish. But the truth is, it's hard to put up a lot of points. Vanderbilt, 45 versus Charleston Southern. I understand. Boo freaking who. But guess what? The next week, they went to Virginia Tech and put up 44. All right. That same South Carolina offense you saw a minute ago, they put up like 20 versus Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech goes to Blacksburg, puts up 44. South Carolina, 31 points at South Carolina. Now, once again, they didn't have Sellers, but they put up 31. Georgia State in a revenge game, they put up 70 points. The following week versus Utah State, they put up 55 points. I understand back-to-back home games versus non-Power 4 teams. Y'all, that is a ridiculous amount of points. To put up a 70 spot and a 55 spot, that means your offense is good. And then versus Alabama, better athletes at their place. Yeah, this offense got anemic, but they started off good. You saw it a minute ago. Alabama's the best team in the country. Okay. Tennis girl, good to see you. The LSU Kittens, good to see you then. Yeah, AP, it's a problem. It's a problem. We cannot stay on our feet. We struggle just staying upright. Okay? And I don't like that. I don't know about you. I do think, in particular at the college level, but also honestly, at the NFL level, one of the more underrated things you can do is just stay upright. That's one of the more underrated things you can do. It's just stay on your feet. It's hard, but it's so important that you just stay upright. Don't fall down. If you're diving and make a catch, sure. But one thing to go along with AP's point, and you've heard me talk about this quite a bit, but we do not do a good job of anything when it comes to balance and when it comes to reading a play. So a good example of this, we mistime our jumps on so many receptions. Chris Hilton's really bad at it. Tre'Davious Green mistimed a jump on that Garrett Nussmeier go ball down the sideline. That was a really good throw. And Tre'Davious mistimed it. Now, Tre'Davious was really good overall. I will say that Garrett to Tre'Davious connection was open. It was there. If there is one thing we are doing elite offensively, it's, well, Tre'Davious going for a hundo. So, you know, it does excite me, but at the same time, can we run the football? Seth Lopez says, second half Ole Miss in South Carolina felt like the offense had rhythm. The points didn't show, but it felt like something changed. Convert this and the game is a 14-point win. All right. Coming up after this, what does the number one sports analytic account say about LSU versus Vanderbilt? PHL Nation, it's time to lock in and get serious really quickly with our friends at Fortified Gulf Coast and FortifiedGulf.com. This is my buddy, Ramey. He is one of many Fortified Gulf Coast inspection professionals that are doing something to help you not only save your home, but your memories.
The Fortified program got started about 13 years ago. We adopted it here in New Orleans about 2.5 years ago. It's a more advanced way of doing the roof. It adds an extra layer of protection, whereas even if a hurricane was to pull the shingles off this roof, water will still not get into the house.
So yes, your establishment is important, but what about the things you can't replace? That family scrapbook or that painting that's been handed down from Meemaw to Papaw and to you? It is important to protect that today with Fortified Roofing. And while this seems like a priceless asset, did you know it can actually save you on your homeowner's insurance up to 37% if you are in South Louisiana? Just call the number 504-444-7563. That's 504-444-7563, or visit fortifiedgulf.com. That's FortifiedGulf.com. Power Hour Network listeners and viewers, you might be consuming this content with that crick in your back that you've been trying to get rid of for so long. Take this as your sign today to book your appointment with LabordTherapy.com. In the Lafayette region, there is no one that you will find that cares more about any different type of pain that you might have than the team at LabordTherapy.com. Book today. Once again, that's LabordTherapy.com, or you can visit one of their 5 locations all throughout the Lafayette region. Okay, so what I want you to do is not overreact to what I'm going to show you. This is via Parker Fleming of Stat Previews. But first, actually, let me just go and show you what his raw numbers actually show in this game. His predictive model says Vanderbilt will win this game 27-20. With an average win probability of 63%, which basically means Vanderbilt is winning this game 2 out of every 3 times the game is played. Well, Vanderbilt's only a 2.5-point favorite. This is a pretty big number, if you ask me. To go from 7 down to 2. So what his model is telling him is that this is a huge game. Huge game that the bettors should be betting in favor of Vanderbilt. And you see in that top quadrant, points per quality drive, LSU is 124th in points per quality drive. 118th in rushing success rate. 118th in net points per drive. It's a problem. Okay? Now, I want to show you what Cameron Roberson, LSU beat on Twitter. I'm going to follow him after this. LSU only has a greater than 50% win probability as road teams versus just two opponents, South Carolina and Kentucky. So I'll explain what that means. So basically, Parker has a computer. All right, so he inserts data into these computers, and it spits out what, based on all those metrics, show how that game predictively plays out in his model. All right, and so many people have models now. You can actually go to his site and put LSU up against anybody. I could do it now, but I'm not going to because it can get very nerdy with all the numbers. And I've done it. In the past, I didn't do it for this game. I'm just using what other people have done. And so what Cameron decided to do was he did this for every road game. So it took him a while to run through all those numbers. And what that tells me is two different things. The first is LSU has such a big home field advantage. We are so much better at home than we are on the road. And then the second thing is that per the model, LSU's just not that good. Now, once again, games aren't played on models. Models do tend to lean a little bit more offensive, which to me is valid. You look at a lot of the college football playoff teams, rarely do the college football playoff teams that make it have putrid offenses. There are some that don't have great defenses, but most of the ones that make it are top 20 in yards per play, top 20 in all of that. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Oh, look, one of my favorite PHLers is calling me. TJ, you're live on PHL. What's up, bud? tell the world, everybody. Tell everybody hello.
Am I really live?
Yeah, we're live right now. Say, this is your time to shine, baby.
What's up?
Is LSU going to get the dub tonight? Or on Saturday, excuse me. Is LSU going to get it done?
If we don't turn the ball over too much, we will.
There we go. All right, I'll call you back. I'm about to wrap it up here in a bit.
Okay.
TJ, man, I normally don't take calls, but TJ called me. TJ's been, what, a top 10 donor on PHL? I hope he's not mad that I put him on. And I've DJed TJ's wedding before. If you need me to DJ your wedding, let me know. I'm actually going to Baton Rouge to DJ a Friday wedding for a PHL. I'm really excited about that. Not this Friday, but the next Friday. I'll be in BR. And I actually do need an assistant. So I'm going to vet one of you guys or gals to come help me out. Set up my lights. Set up my mixing board. And my speakers. Jay Smack says about TJ, what's good, bro? Legendary CEO coming in hot. Let's go to Slick Will. I would say put Josh Thompson in right tackle and let DJ Chester start at right guard, and boom, you have your offensive line. Because Thompson has played right tackle before. He has. And Chester could play right guard. I'm open to it. I am. Okay. So every Wednesday, we say hi to Geo. What's up, Geo dude? Let's go, man. Like, Geo dude's getting a pump in. Let me know if you're still in here, Geo dude. He's live from Planet Fitness. That's what it looks like. King MJ says the offense is not well oiled. Boom. SEC power rankings for this week. For me, LSU is a B-tier team. I think Ole Miss is solidly in that second tier on its own. I'm a little bit higher than most on Tennessee, as you can see, even though they've had a few close wins versus C-tier teams. I think Kentucky's the worst team in the SEC by a wide margin. But then again, the elites aren't as elite, and the bad teams aren't as bad. If Arkansas is your third worst team in the SEC with the way their offense is played, shows you how strong the league is this year, or how many non-bad teams there are in the SEC. I think Oklahoma, ironically, I think Oklahoma could actually go down here. I think Florida and Texas can keep moving up the way that they're playing. But I do think Missouri, it's weird for Missouri. I actually wanted to put Missouri behind Vanderbilt here. And it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 from left to right if you're looking at this. So if you're listening via Spotify, iTunes, all that stuff, Alabama 1, Georgia 2, Tennessee 3, A&M 4, Ole Miss 5, and Tier 2. Tier 3, we have Missouri, LSU, Texas, OU, Vanderbilt, Auburn, and Florida. Tier 4, we have State, Arkansas, and South Carolina, and then we have Kentucky in Tier 5. Let's go to Will. Look at you using a Berrion Brown. I like that. I think Georgia is way too high. Only A&M and Bama are worthy of elite. Keely says, I agree. I don't think Ole Miss is great at all. Brian thinks I'm too high on Tennessee. Yeah. LSU didn't have Caden and Durham. Jay Smack says, I think we find our offense this weekend. Look at AP saying, hey, look, Geo, dude, is stacked. Look at that, bro. I like that. All right, we'll take a few more here. George says, wish your better half a happy birthday. I did give her all the Super Chat money that you gave yesterday. It's all going to her for her birthday. Birthday dinner tonight. Maybe some other birthday shenanigans, which of course means playing tic-tac-toe. It is still amazing to me. Two things that are tearing up social media right now. So there's this thing going on with these chubby SEC dudes that go to these SEC schools, and they date smoke shows at these SEC schools. It's the dudes, and everyone's making fun of how some of these dudes look to some of these smoke shows. And so what? They're like, we should be celebrating this, not demonizing it in any way. So fellas, if you outkicked, congrats to you. Congrats to you. Another thing is this James Franklin revisionist history. Holy moly. I am so sick of hearing, well, you know, he was only a few plays away from a national championship game. Did you know that? Yeah, it was based on bracket luck. You played a very shaky SMU team who no one with a brain really, really, really felt they belonged in college football playoff. Then you played Boise State, which no longer would have a 3 seed. They've already changed that ruling. You got to play them and Boise State was the weakest team in the field. Then you played Notre Dame, who got there because Gunnar Stockton was the quarterback of Georgia, and Carson Beck got hurt in the SEC championship game. So Penn State, which basically got dog walked by Oregon, was on the other side of the bracket. Texas was on the other side of the bracket. So it was bracket luck with anyone that actually watched the game. And you're telling me that Penn State is doing something rash? Because a guy who has completely gone off the rails, then in the game that you lost in the college football playoff, you couldn't complete a single pass to a wide receiver? What? You can't throw one little screen? I understand you have Tyler Warren and you had a good game. It's crazy. Birthday shenanigans. Yeah, you better believe it. I don't know. No, she's going to bed at 8. That's why we have to go out so early. I was like, 6 p.m. for a birthday dinner? It's so freaking early. Grandma time. But you'll see when y'all get to your mid-30s, man. I can't go to bed that early because during football season, I can't. But damn, dude. When you get in your mid-30s and you're in bed by 9:30, it feels good. It feels good. With no extra shenanigans. I'm talking about just pass out. Netflix, no chill. Just go straight to sleep. Feels good. It feels good. And then, you know, you had Joel Klatt do a spot with Colin Cowherd, and he said a gazillion names for the Penn State opening, and he brought up Brian Kelly. It's not going to happen. But then you never know. I'm done guessing what's happening in coaching searches. Now, one thing you understand when you get older, which is crazy, because I feel like as a sports consumer, you do mature. Now, some people don't. There's some people that if your team loses, you just go into the same state of mind, which is fine. I have no qualms about that. I went insane. I was live during the Garrett Nussmeier INT. I went insane. That's a bunch of made me go crazy. But as you get older, you understand how important ownership is in professional sports. Ownership matters so much. Same thing is true in college. Your athletic director and board of regents matter so much. Now, I'm not saying it matters as much as it does ownership in pro sports, but you should be very happy that Scott Woodward is happy at LSU and that he's from Baton Rouge and this is his dream job. Now, I'm not saying he can't leave. A&M lost their AD, and he went to a school, and he was from the school, and then he went to Nebraska. I think it was Trev Alberts. I might have that flipped, how that actually happened. I'm not an athletic director expert, but what I can tell you is you should be very happy that Billy Napier was never your coach, and you should be very happy that Scott Strickland was never your athletic director. Okay? Now, a couple of our old schoolers that are super dedicated to LSU beefs know that Scott Strickland was in a very crazy one in the mid-2010s with the LSU-Florida hurricane debacle. But goodness gracious, I cannot state how many stupid things that they have done structurally with their NIL, with how they go about hiring and firing coaches. Like, for example, if an LSU coach ever slaps an opposing team's player, you're done. You're done. You're fired. It's done. You can't do that. There's no wiggle room for that. That happened earlier this year. Then, a few years ago, they fired so many assistant coaches 3 days before signing day. And so all the kids decommitted and went elsewhere. No, it's a crappy thing to do, but you wait till after the signatures are on the paper. And then you fire your coaches. Texas did that with Sark when they hired him. Then, if I remember correctly, don't hold me to it. Then you have, I cannot state this enough. And this is no disrespect to some of the guys who actually reported this. I cannot tell you, as someone who follows social media really closely for news breaking and all of it, the same people break stories. Pete Thamel, Bruce Feldman, the same national reporters break coaching hirings and firings and all of it. But everybody had scoops that Florida is firing Billy Napier this weekend. I'm telling you right now, one of my nearest and dearest friends, Aaron Torres, is not in the news breaking industry. It's not what he does. He reports today that there's a lot of motion. There is other kind of opinion people that are like me in talent evaluation saying, hey, there's some stuff moving in Gainesville. How does this get leaked to so many different people? There's nothing for those people I just named to gain. Yeah, they get a lot of tweets and maybe some follows, but they'll unfollow you when they learn that you're not a newsbreaker. It is crazy how poorly all of this is being handled, where I would fire the AD, but he's not going to get fired because Florida's good in every other sport. They're really good in baseball. They just won the basketball national championship. But holy moly. God, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. Yeah, same here. Florida is who I hate the most, which is why I'm kind of pissed we won't play them every year anymore. Gaming heavy. My favorite Henderson State Ready of all time. I have quite a few teammates that played at Henderson. Oh, you want me to do a Bijan Robinson video on the NFL channel? You want me to say something nice about a Falcon? That's not happening. Todd McClure could be sitting right here, and I would say, you suck. I'm kidding. Todd McClure is an all-time great at LSU. And he played his whole career, unfortunately, for the Falcons. A lot of good LSU players at the Falcons. Deion Jones. Jalen Collins, who's better at doing this media stuff than me. I like Jalen Collins. But Bijan is good. Ironically, Bijan is into DJing, and he's better at DJing than me. He's been doing it a year, been doing it five. Yeah. Arkansas is a good team. They just have a bad defense. Y'all, it's almost time for me to get into my best mode as a human being, which is LSU women's basketball mode. God bless. I can't freaking wait for this season. The last Flage year, it is going to be sad. It is going to be so sad. Okay, I got some good news, y'all. Like, literally, this is good news. I was getting ready to sign it off for the night, but knowing my crazy family, they actually booked the reservations for 7. So this is when I would normally get ready to go live. We're live now. We're going to be live for a little bit longer. I'm not mad about it. So we had to start early because wife birthday, they said that they booked it at 6. Now it's at 7. I'm dressed nice. I got some cologne on. I was in here smelling like Versace. Smelling like some Polo Ralph Lauren. For this whole stream, I don't really like the smell of cologne. But we're going to somewhere like kind of nice. And I was like, let me go ahead and make sure I'm dressed so I can go straight there. And now you tell me it's at 7? I could have done my normal show? Yeah, I was booked at 6. Yeah, I show up a little late. Show up fashionably late. It's not that far from here. So I was going to end this thing like literally like right now. And then go and then show up at like 6:10. But I swear, Haley's family, they are white. I mean, they are Caucasian. But somehow, some way, they got some CPT in them. They cannot get anything time correct. They just cannot show up on time. They get on me. They get on me. It drives me nuts. Drives me nuts. God dog. I'm used to showing up late. I'm used to showing up late for my family's events. That's funny, Jordan. Less miles clock management. You better believe it. So I'm actually glad because I had a bunch of stuff here to talk about for tomorrow. We'll touch on some of it here. Oh, man. You know, for me, as far as I'm actually glad because I wanted to talk some LSU women's basketball. We were going to have Matthew Bruin on yesterday, but it couldn't work out. So he's the best women's basketball mind out there. He's an actual basketball coach. And he writes for On3, really good friend of the channel. And so he knows all these, like he actually watches film on the women's basketball players. Obviously, if you have some LSU women's basketball knowledge, you know the two stars on this team are Michaela and Flage. And if you have some overall women's basketball knowledge, you know Malaysia Fulwiley comes over from South Carolina, and he is definitely the most exciting point guard of like the last 5 years. I'm not saying she's the best, but she's got some Showtime Lakers to her game. And it's going to be interesting. Yeah, the Kaylee Kovics girl from Ukraine transfer from Notre Dame. Dude, this team's going to be good. The one thing I hope, though, and this is not a shot at Kim, okay, because we're obviously really good. We're obviously really good. But I do hope now that we have Fulwiley that we become a little bit more modern, right? If your three best players are going to be perimeter players and you don't have Samaya Smith anymore and Del Rosario's gone, even though she was phased down, and obviously we're a few years removed from the Angel Reese era, let's spread this bad boy on out. Let's move the ball. I mean, There are so many teams in the SEC that are good that play this bland, archaic style. Texas is the worst. So, obviously, I care more about winning than anything else. But with the three guards that we have, it's probably the best three-guard ball-handling lineup in the country this year. I hope we open this thing up and just let them go wild. So, I'm all in on Mikayla in a breakout season. Flage, oh, Mikayla was a breakout star last year, but I think she goes to another level. And I think Full Wiley's going to be great. Yes, play more like an AAU team. I can't believe I'm saying that. But they won't. And rightfully so. I'm not Bob Starkey. I don't know enough about this to say, hey, we should run the Princeton offense, or we should run what Calipari did at Memphis with Derrick Rose. But it would be nice. It would be nice. I think we have the talent to do it. I do. Oh, Pegasus says LSU by 10 as well. Interesting. Oh, Jay Smack, she would destroy you. And I've stood next to you. You're a tall guy. Caitlin would destroy you. Now, I do want to play this one clip that I saw earlier, and I hate to, like, people are tuning in and it's just now basketball talk. I won't go into why we started late, but I wanted it was basketball media day today, and I feel like it would be hypocritical if I did not play this clip.
Go back over here on the right, TJ.
Coach, for fans or some of the fans that may have expected a coaching change after missing the tournament the past few years, I guess what would you tell them on why you should still be the one leading this team?
Yeah, I think it's a new season for us. Clearly, we didn't capitalize on the season we had 2 years ago when we won 9 SEC games and finished 7th in the league. Felt we had the momentum moving in the right direction, and you know, following Jalen Reed's injury last year, we weren't able to capitalize and had a very disappointing SEC season. But as I look to the future of our program, there's great excitement in the roster we've been able to build. There's great chemistry and energy amongst our group. The only two returners, number one's Jalen Reed, who should have all the confidence in the world coming into the season. As I mentioned, he started 7-1 with the team last year. Three of those were Power 4 wins. His last Power 4 win, he had 21 points and 13 rebounds. And really praised him for the work he's put in to get back. The other returner we wanted to retain, Rob Miller, 6'10", 235 pounds, 7'5" wingspan. I've mentioned the 19-point, 10-rebound game he had last year. Really expect him to have a breakout season. And then we've addressed the areas that need to be addressed in roster construction so that we can match up and compete here in the best league in the country.
All right. I felt like that was a really good question. Just say, hey, why in the hell do you still have a job? That was a really good, I don't know who the reporter was, but I want this to be clear. This will always be an LSU football first channel. And 90% of the time, it's going to be LSU football stuff. I don't do day-to-day LSU baseball stuff. I have a lot of respect for those that do, and I love that team. Jay Johnson is by far the best coach alongside Kim Mulkey on campus right now. But I will tell you this. If we do not make the men's basketball tournament this year, I will go insane for an hour straight on this live stream. It is unacceptable that we have not made the tournament. Everybody makes it. I mean, it is a 68-team tournament. 14 of these 16 SEC teams made it. So I don't want to hear about Jalen Reed coming back from injury or, you know, a few of these SEC teams could take a step back. Auburn not having their guy anymore, Bruce Pearl. You know, the truth is, and I want to get as close as I can to the camera, we have just got to make the tournament. That's all I'm asking. Just be one of these 68 best teams in America. I know it's hard. The SEC is it's insane. It's insane. There's five legitimate coaches you could say is the best coach in the SEC. Five different ones you could point to. Probably more than that. Make the damn tournament. That's all I ask. It's not much. Be one of the 68 best teams. Let's go to cold out ya. Do I think Nuss should run more often instead of throwing picks? Well, you know, out of all the throws that he did make that did end up being picks, could he have run on any of them? Well, neither of the South Carolina ones he could have ran. I do think the first South Carolina INT, he could have stepped up into the pocket a little bit more, but he likes to backpedal. And there are instances where backpedaling is smart. But does he need to run more? Yeah, he ran properly versus South Carolina. He took mostly the rush angles and lanes I would have taken if I was a QB. But all I ask is to not turn the football over in the red zone. And I thought that was going to get better this year. And it's one of the L's I will take. I thought Garrett was going to be a really good quarterback this year, but so far it's just not been the case. He's not been bad. QBRs have been 75s basically in every game, which is good. PFF grades are good. But the thing about it is those overall metrics are mostly aggregating how you do on a play-to-play basis. It does not factor in how much more negative a big INT like the one versus South Carolina can really affect the outcome of your game. So you can still be a Garrett Nussmeier fan and appreciate everything he did for the team last year. What you can also do is say, look, this is unacceptable. It's something we just cannot let happen. Now, I was only going to do a few plays, but let's do a few more plays from this Vanderbilt game, see if we could pick up any weaknesses here. So, if you're just joining us, we broke down this counter run earlier, and you could see how far back this Alabama offensive line pushed back their defensive line. There are holes to be had versus this Vanderbilt defense. A lot of single digits out there, not a lot of bite. But they are a good unit. Okay. This is a play that we ran, or a variation of it, or the same philosophy with this play. So you fake everything to the right and you're trying to run overs to the left. And you could see, boom. Okay, that throw was into heavy traffic. Seven's a good player for this Vanderbilt secondary. And then they kick a field goal. Okay, now here's where it gets interesting. The QB run game for Vanderbilt. So they're running a QB counter GY to the right, okay? They're pulling the left guard and the left side tight end. Let me know if you're enjoying the film review while we are live, okay? So, Bernard Gooden, we'll see how it actually plays out. We could be without him. We could be without a few other defensive linemen. I know this unit is banged up. We do not have Gabriel Relaford, who's really good against the run. So they're going to do this. And what's interesting is Alabama is bringing a blitz from the left side, and the counter is being run to the right. We like to blitz our DBs, as many of you know. So this is the perfect play call versus this look, because you're blitzing from the opposite side of where the run is actually going, and you see how many guys are past the QB when Pavia is actually running through here. And this is a big game. All your fast guys are at least 5 to 10 yards behind the play. And obviously, number 18, if you'll say Ryan, this would probably be a touchdown. But 10, Jefferson can run Pavia down. He doesn't have the seller's gear, if you will. But they're going to try and do this versus us, so we need to be ready for it. Okay? Then we get to here. They're tight end. Eli Stowers, number 9, really good player, converted quarterback, okay? So that's him running near the 20, you have a shallow drag. Look, there's a lot of stuff open here. They scheme a lot of things open. Now, I will say a lot of this is soft and bad defense. I don't want to play pitch and catch versus these skill guys. I really, really, really don't, okay? But still, Pavia, if you let him, he can get you from the pocket too. And this is where we want this offense to be. We want them to go, hey, goal line fade through versus our corners, make it Pavia beat us from the pocket. I don't mind that. Try that. Try that on Montour de Lane. See if it works. Then we get to this one, 3rd and 10. Okay, you can see this offensive line, their experience, they pass off stunts well. You get a cross dog up the middle, and then you have a blitzer flying off the second level of the defense. Everything gets picked up. Center does fall on his butt, but the protection here is really, really, really good. But nothing's open. Notice here, the rush keeps everything with Pavia up the middle. We do not want him rolling out to the outside. And have a backer right there. And I could pull up the all 22 to see if something was actually open. But we want him to stay in that spot. And then look, the ball comes loose. Huge turnover in the game. Okay? Took 3 points off the board. Jordan Jefferson's a really good player. Okay, let's get back to their defense. Once again, you could see up the gut on this defense, you can move their guys. It's the same thing here. All right, the play side tight end gets absolutely mauled by the defensive end, but you're getting movement up the gut. 94, pushed out of the gap. That double team on that DT to the top of the screen, nasty. Good lead block from the fullback, and look at that hole. It's there. It's there. Do we have the guys up the middle that can get the damn job done? One thing of note, Braylon Moore played in the stadium last year, and it was his first ever game. So he's accustomed to this environment to a certain degree. Can he get the guys motivated to step up and play big? But you can run on them. And obviously, if you establish it, see here, this is a very interesting way to run this little power play where you have the center pulling around. 75, that's a good second level block. And then look at that. I mean, these are gaping holes. I mean, these are big holes. These are American Eagle blue jeans in 2007 level holes. You know the holes that they would put in the jeans at the kneecap inexplicably? That was an actual style. Yeah, let's go to Hollister and buy $50 jeans. They got holes in them. And speaking of holes, boom, hole shot. That wasn't playing, by the way. Jeremy Bernard. Can Garrett throw this hole shot right here? He can. His best throw at LSU was in that Georgia SEC championship game. It was a hole shot to Malik Nabers. This is a filthy throw by Ty. Absolutely filthy. It looks open. Hole shots are always more difficult than one would think. because you're putting your safety at high risk for a big shot. You got to throw that thing in there. Okay? This is a play that Arkansas runs a lot. This is also something that I wish we did a lot more of. So just run three verticals and have a shallow drag run right behind it. Look at how open that is. Okay? Vanderbilt likes to make games long and drawn out. So their DBs are going to play off of our guys, even though we have not shown that we can complete a deep pass. We've got to be able to hit this stuff underneath, make guys miss. Can you get a trade as green yak game? But keep it moving. Okay. Apparently, a few of you still rock the jeans with the holes in them. I have never understood that. But to each your own. We need to bring overalls back now, the more I think about it. Play extension right here. Obviously, that's not really Garrett's game. And we don't have Orion Williams, even though Orion Williams has not been that great. This year, he's been hurt, apparently. So let's go to Vandy's next offensive possession. I kind of like doing the live film study. It saves me a lot of time. All right, so we got trips to the field here. And Pavi is looking. It looks into the boundary. Everything's guarded. And he does have a tendency to do this. And he didn't need to do this because the end falls down. And he just throws this thing up. All right, so he had some time to extend the play. He threw a pick in this very similar fashion. Hey, Sissy. Okay. Everyone say hi to Sissy. What you got to say? Go. Let's keep it going. Nothing wrong with the Sissy break. All right. Can our offensive line hold up? Vanderbilt has been able to get some pressure from their front. It's big for them in the Virginia Tech game, and they're able to get some right up the gut here. Can we hold up? Can we hold up? Okay. This will probably be the last play that we break down. Vanderbilt beat Alabama with this play last year, and they run it twice in this game. The shovel pass. I mean, it's just crazy that this has become a big piece of what they do. And the shovel pass is one of the more beautiful plays in all of football. So you get a shovel pass here. Once again, Jefferson, number 10, was so big for Alabama. I remember him. We recruited him pretty heavily out of the portal. You'll see right here, on this 3rd and 10, the running back stretches out for the first down. Always a dangerous thing to do. Ball could get knocked out and ask Juwan Johnson. So then, if QB run to the right, I take a block right there by 16 on the edge. He gets tripped up, and then on the next play, to get the shovel pass again. It's practically the same play you just saw a minute ago. Play action fake, and you throw it right back to the running back. Boom. 50 with a very nice block, and basically Alexander runs into the end zone for a nice game. There you go. Got to be ready for the shovel. Sissy, what are you doing? Oh. So this is her crown jewel right here. Yeah, we're still on. Sissy's been on here. All right. I want to have a conversation about our content here. If you're just joining us, we had to start at 5 because I had something to do at 6. We will be back live at 6. Yeah, Jason. Hey, dude, let's not keep it PG-13 here. I mean, what the hell? I did not know. Well, I did know, but man, dude, TikTok is insane. I've had a few videos. I started a college football TikTok and I started an NFL TikTok. So if you guys can go follow me, please. So the NFL TikTok is NFL Film Guy. Make sure I get this. Okay, the green screen's going to make it kind of weird, but it's NFL.film.guy. And then the college football one is, we're almost at 100 followers, which I heard is kind of tough to get in 1 week. CFB.filmstudy. And we have had 1, 2, 3, 4 videos hit 5K, and we've only done 10 videos. So half the videos have hit 5,000 views. And I don't know, how many of you scroll TikTok? Do most of you, when you watch content, do you just watch YouTube or do you actually watch short form? Yeah, is that Drake? Yeah, it's Drizzy. I use Drake in my bat and in the film studies. My light skinned brethren, we gotta stick together. I'm also Canadian. Kidding. TikTok will steal your soul. Sure, have it. The Chinese, they can have my soul. Go right on ahead. Y'all don't like talk? I mean, everyone's done. Actually, that's where the joke started popping up on TikTok about like how erotic football conversations can be. And this, and I'm not being gross saying this, but I know this as a play-by-play announcer. You know, people say come inside a lot. They just do. It's not, I'm not being nasty. It's not a pause or anything like that. So everyone makes like nasty jokes about that. But the blitzers come inside some of the time, right? Or the defensive end comes inside where it's a twist. You're coming inside and then the DT's going outside. I know we make like funny jokes from time to time, but so that trend is going crazy on TikTok. Someone clipping times when announcers say that. But there's a lot of like those kind of things that you'll hear during a football broadcast, which is crazy to me. It's absolutely crazy. Everyone's brain is so nasty. Y'all need to touch grass and go see Jesus. Ask Jesus into your heart or whatever medical metaphysical being you might worship. Or if you don't worship any, that's fine too. But for real, if that's all you're hearing on a broadcast, you don't need to be watching football. You need to be on the front pew. You need to be at Healing Place. You need to drive your butt down Segan Lane and be there front pew Sunday. I don't even know if they have pews. Most churches don't even have pews anymore. They have chairs. And if you're a youth director, you know your job half of the time is just stacking chairs. I don't know why. Every youth director, every church youth group I was in, it was stack those chairs. Get them off the basketball court. Shorty, where have you been, dude? Disappointed in you. I've been missing you. Good to see you. It's good to see you, dude. All right, y'all, that'll do it for me. I've been instructed that it's time for us to go. So I will go. Big thanks to all our... Oh, we didn't get any supers. No supers. It's all good. We'll be live tomorrow night with... I don't know who we're going to have on tomorrow. 6 p.m. Central. It's going to be a great time. And don't forget... Join our PHL Patreon. Advanced stat previews will be going up tonight, including our own. We do our own advanced stat preview. What is our line going to look like? You will see right now on Patreon, okay? Big thanks to everyone, and we'll see you tomorrow. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom! Tonight we are doing, I don't know what I'm doing. I'll check the menu when I get there. Let's go.